Hello and thank you for tuning in to Barkada Circle, your tribe of storytellers for nonprofit organizations. We're broadcasting on Party 93.4. Barkada is a word in the Filipino language that means best friends. Barkada Circle is a community of artists who are passionate about helping nonprofit organizations tell their stories in more compelling ways to engage people into becoming active supporters, volunteers, and donors who want to create real positive impact in their community. I'm Panangara, your main mixologist for Barkada Circle. You can check out my blog on barkadacircle.com, where I talk about storytelling for nonprofits, fundraising, and how to grow your organization's impact and value for the community. Our storytelling theme for this month is how to hone your elevator pitch. Now picture it. The door opens and you both step into the car. She pushes the button for the lobby and the door closes. It's a few floors down, so you decide to strike up a conversation about the event that you just attended. She then asks, "What do you do?" When your job hinges on how well you talk to people, you learn a lot about how to have conversations, and that most of us don't converse very well. Celeste Headley's years of interview experience give her a unique perspective on what makes for a good conversation. Headley has worked in public radio since 1999 as a reporter, host, and correspondent. She was the Midwest correspondent for NPR before becoming the co-host of the PRI show, The Takeaway. She knows the ingredients of a great conversation: honesty, brevity, clarity, and a healthy amount of listening. In this insightful talk, she shares 10 useful rules for having better conversations. Go out, talk to people, listen to people, she says. And most importantly, be prepared to be amazed. Let's be amazed by Celeste Headley and her 10 ways to have a better conversation.
TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and partner events. This episode features writer and radio host Celeste Headley. Here's Celeste Headley.
All right, I want to see a show of hands. How many of you have unfriended someone on Facebook because they said something offensive about politics or religion, childcare, food? And how many of you know at least one person that you avoid because you just don't want to talk to them? You know, it used to be that in order to have a polite conversation, we just had to follow the advice of Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady: stick to the weather and your health. But these days, with climate change and anti-vaxxing, those subjects are not safe either. So this world that we live in, this world in which every conversation has the potential to devolve into an argument, where our politicians can't speak to one another, and where even the most trivial of issues have someone fighting both passionately for it and against it, it's not normal. Pew Research did a study of 10,000 American adults, and they found that at this moment, we are more polarized, we are more divided than we ever have been in history. We're less likely to compromise, which means we're not listening to each other, and we make decisions about where to live, who to marry, and even who our friends are going to be based on what we already believe. Again, that means we're not listening to each other. A conversation requires a balance between talking and listening, and somewhere along the way, we lost that balance. Now, part of that is due to technology, the smartphones that you all either have in your hands or close enough that you could grab them really quickly. According to Pew Research, about a third of American teenagers send more than 100 texts a day. And many of them, almost most of them, are more likely to text their friends than they are to talk to them face to face. There's this great piece in The Atlantic. It was written by a high school teacher named Paul Barnwell. And he gave his kids a communication project. He wanted to teach them how to speak on a specific subject without using notes. And he said this: I came to realize that conversational competence might be the single most overlooked skill we fail to teach. Kids spend hours each day engaging with ideas and each other through screens, but rarely do they have an opportunity to hone their interpersonal communication skills. It might sound like a funny question, but we have to ask ourselves, is there any 21st century skill more important than being able to sustain coherent, confident conversation? Now, I make my living talking to people. Nobel Prize winners, truck drivers, billionaires, kindergarten teachers, heads of state, plumbers. I talk to people that I like. I talk to people that I don't like. I talk to some people that I disagree with deeply on a personal level, but I still have a great conversation with them. So I'd like to spend the next 10 minutes or so teaching you how to talk and how to listen. Many of you have already heard a lot of advice on this. Things like look the person in the eye, think of interesting things, topics to discuss in advance, look, nod and smile to show that you're paying attention. Repeat back what you just heard or summarize it. So I want you to forget all of that. It is crap. There is no reason to learn how to show you're paying attention if you are, in fact, paying attention. Now, I actually use the exact same skills as a professional interviewer that I do in regular life. I'm going to teach you how to interview people, and that's actually going to help you learn how to be better conversationalists. Learn to have a conversation without wasting your time, without getting bored, and please God, without offending anybody. We've all had really great conversations. We've had them before. We know what it's like. The kind of conversation where you walk away feeling engaged and inspired, or where you feel like you've made a real connection or you've been perfectly understood. There is no reason why most of your interactions can't be like that. So I have 10 basic rules. I'm going to walk you through all of them. But honestly, if you just choose one of them and master it, you're already going to enjoy better conversations. Number one, don't multitask. And I don't mean just set down your cell phone or your tablet or your car keys or whatever's in your hand. I mean, be present. Be in that moment. Don't be thinking about your argument you have with your boss. Don't be thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. If you want to get out of the conversation, get out of the conversation. But don't be half in it and half out of it. Number two, don't pontificate. If you want to just state your opinion without any opportunity for response or argument or pushback or growth, write a blog. Now, there's a really good reason why I don't allow pundits on my show, because they're really boring. If they're a conservative, they're going to hate Obama and food stamps and abortion. If they're a liberal, they're going to hate big banks and oil corporations and Dick Cheney. Totally predictable. And you don't want to be like that. You need to enter every conversation assuming that you have something to learn. The famed therapist M. Scott Peck said that true listening requires a setting aside of oneself. And sometimes that means setting aside your personal opinion. He said that sensing this acceptance, the speaker will become less and less vulnerable and more likely to open up the inner recesses of his or her mind to the listener. Again, assume that you have something to learn. Bill Nye, everyone you will ever meet knows something that you don't. I put it this way, everybody is an expert in something. Number three, use open-ended questions. In this case, take a cue from journalists. Start your questions with who, what, where, when, why, or how. If you put in a complicated question, you're going to get a simple answer out. If I ask you, were you terrified? You're going to respond to the most powerful word in that sentence, which is terrified. And the answer is, yes, I was, or no, I wasn't. Were you angry? Yes, I was very angry. Let them describe it. They're the ones that know. Try asking them things like, what was that like? How did that feel? Because then they might have to stop for a moment and think about it, and you're going to get a much more interesting response. Number four, go with the flow. That means thoughts will come into your mind, and you need to let them go out of your mind. We've heard interviews often in which a guest is talking for several minutes, and then the host comes back in and asks a question which seems like it comes out of nowhere or it's already been answered. That means the host probably stopped listening 2 minutes ago because he thought of this really clever question, and he was just bound and determined to say that. And we do the exact same thing. We're sitting there having a conversation with someone, and then we remember that time that we met Hugh Jackman in a coffee shop. And we stop listening. Stories and ideas are going to come to you. You need to let them come and let them go. Number 5, if you don't know, say that you don't know. Now, people on the radio, especially on NPR, are much more aware that they're going on the record. And so they're more careful about what they claim to be an expert in and what they claim to know for sure. Do that. Err on the side of caution. Talk should not be cheap. Number 6, don't equate your experience with theirs. If they're talking about having lost a family member, don't start talking about the time that you lost a family member. If they're talking about the trouble that they're having at work, don't tell them about how much you hate your job. It's not the same. It is never the same. All experiences are individual. And more importantly, it is not about you. You don't need to take that moment to prove how amazing you are or how much you've suffered. Somebody asked Stephen Hawking once what his IQ was, and he says, "I have no idea. People who brag about their IQs are losers." Conversations are not a promotional opportunity. Number 7, try not to repeat yourself. It's condescending and it's really boring. And we tend to do it a lot, especially in work conversations or in conversations with our kids. We have a point to make, so we just keep rephrasing it over and over. Don't do that. Number 8, stay out of the weeds. Frankly, people don't care about the years, the names, the dates, all those details that you're struggling to come up with in your mind. They don't care. What they care about is you. They care about what you're like, what you have in common. So forget the details. Leave them out. Number 9, this is not the last one, but it is the most important one. Listen. I cannot tell you how many really important people have said that listening is perhaps the number one most important skill that you could develop. Buddha said, and I'm paraphrasing, "If your mouth is open, you're not learning." And Calvin Coolidge said, "No man ever listened his way out of a job." Why do we not listen to each other? Number 1, we'd rather talk. When I'm talking, I'm in control. I don't have to hear anything I'm not interested in. I'm the center of attention. I can bolster my own identity. But there's another reason. We get distracted. The average person talks at about 225 words per minute, but we can listen at up to 500 words per minute. So our minds are filling in those other 275 words. And look, I know it takes effort and energy to actually pay attention to someone. But if you can't do that, you're not in a conversation. You're just two people shouting out barely related sentences in the same place. You have to listen to one another. Stephen Covey said it very beautifully. He said, "Most of us don't listen with the intent to understand. We listen with the intent to reply." One more rule, and number 10, and it's this one. Be brief. This boils down to the same basic concept, and it is this one. Be interested in other people. You know, I grew up with a very famous grandfather, and there was kind of a ritual in my home. People would come over to talk to my grandparents, and after they would leave, my mother would come over to us, and she'd say, "Do you know who that was? She was the runner-up to Miss America. He was the mayor of Sacramento. She won a Pulitzer Prize. He's a Russian ballet dancer." And I kind of grew up assuming everyone has some hidden amazing thing about them. And I think it's what makes me a better host. I keep my mouth shut as often as I possibly can. I keep my mind open, and I'm always prepared to be amazed. And I'm never disappointed. You do the same thing. Go out, talk to people, listen to people, and most importantly, be prepared to be amazed. Thanks.
That was Celeste Headlee, recorded at TED in May of 2015. This is Panangara, and you're listening to Barkata Circle on Party 93.4.
Show me what I'm living for. help me understand this life. Walk with me, show me what I'm doing here. Won't you walk with me, my sweet love? When I see the light in your eyes, I realize I finally found my way home. Walk with me, together we can find ground. Won't you walk with me? Together we can lift the veil. Take my hand, my sweet love. When I see the light in your eyes, I realize I finally found.
And that was Hawk with their song, Walk With Me. We are Barcata Circle on Party 93.4. You can follow us on twitter.com/party93.4 and facebook.com/party93.4. The key to having a great conversation hinges on our ability to be active listeners. But have you ever felt like you're talking, but nobody is listening? Julian Treasure is the chair of the Sound Agency, a firm that advises worldwide businesses on how to use sound. He asks us to pay attention to the sounds that surround us. Treasure is the author of the book Sound Business and keeps a blog by the same name that ruminates on oral matters. His most recent book, entitled How to Be Heard: Secrets for Powerful Speaking and Listening, offers an inspiring vision for a sonorous world of effective speaking, listening, and understanding. In this useful talk, the sound expert demonstrates the how-tos of powerful speaking, from some handy vocal exercises to tips on how to speak with empathy. Let's listen to Julian Treasure.
TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and partner events. This episode features sound consultant Julian Treasure. This talk contains powerful visuals. Download the video at TED.com. Here's Julian Treasure.
The human voice. It's the instrument we all play. It's the most powerful sound in the world, probably. It's the only one that can start a war or say, I love you. And yet many people have the experience that when they speak, people don't listen to them. Why is that? How can we speak powerfully to make change in the world? What I'd like to suggest, there are a number of habits that we need to move away from. I've assembled for your pleasure here 7 deadly sins of speaking. I'm not pretending this is an exhaustive list, but these 7, I think, are pretty large. Habits that we can all fall into. First, gossip. Speaking ill of somebody who's not present. Not a nice habit, and we know perfectly well the person gossiping 5 minutes later will be gossiping about us. Second, judging. We know people who are like this in conversation, and it's very hard to listen to somebody if you know that you're being judged and found wanting at the same time. Third, negativity. You can fall into this. My mother, in the last years of her life, became very, very negative, and it's hard to listen. I remember one day I said to her, it's October the 1st today, and she said, I know, isn't it dreadful? It's hard to listen when somebody's that negative. And another form of negativity, complaining. Well, this is the national art of the UK. It's our national sport. We complain about the weather, about sport, about politics, about everything. But actually, complaining is viral misery. It's not spreading sunshine and lightness in the world. Excuses. We've all met this guy. Maybe we've all been this guy. Some people have a blame thrower. They just pass it on to everybody else and don't take responsibility for their actions. And again, hard to listen to somebody who's being like that. Penultimate, the 6th of the 7, embroidery, exaggeration. It demeans our language, actually, sometimes. For example, if I see something that really is awesome, what do I call it? And then, of course, this exaggeration becomes lying, out-and-out lying, and we don't want to listen to people we know are lying to us. And finally, dogmatism. The confusion of facts with opinions. When those two things get conflated, you're listening into the wind. You know, somebody is bombarding you with their opinions as if they were true. It's difficult to listen to that. So here they are, 7 deadly sins of speaking. These are things I think we need to avoid. But is there a positive way to think about this? Yes, there is. I'd like to suggest that there are 4 really powerful cornerstones, foundations, that we can stand on if we want our speech to be powerful and to make change in the world. Fortunately, these things spell a word. The word is hail, and it has a great definition as well. I'm not talking about the stuff that falls from the sky and hits you on the head. I'm talking about this definition, to greet or acclaim enthusiastically, which is, I think, how our words will be received if we stand on these 4 things. So what do they stand for? See if you can guess. The H, honesty, of course. Being true in what you say, being straight and clear. The A is authenticity, just being yourself. A friend of mine described it as standing in your own truth, which I think is a lovely way to put it. The I is integrity, being your word, actually doing what you say, and being somebody people can trust. And the L is love. I don't mean romantic love, but I do mean wishing people well. For 2 reasons. First of all, I think absolute honesty may not be what we want. I mean, my goodness, you look ugly this morning. Perhaps that's not necessary. Tempered with love, of course, honesty is a great thing. But also, if you're really wishing somebody well, it's very hard to judge them at the same time. I'm not even sure you can do those 2 things simultaneously. So hail. Also, now that's what you say, and it's like the old song, it is what you say, it's also the way that you say it. You have an amazing toolbox. This instrument is incredible, and yet this is a toolbox that very few people have ever opened. I'd like to have a little rummage in there with you now, and just pull a few tools out that you might like to take away and play with, which will increase the power of your speaking. Register, for example. Now, falsetto register may not be very useful most of the time, But there's a register in between. I'm not going to get very technical about this for any of you who are voice coaches. You can locate your voice, however. So if I talk up here in my nose, you can hear the difference. If I go down here in my throat, which is where most of us speak from most of the time. But if you want weight, you need to go down here to the chest. You hear the difference? We vote for politicians with lower voices. It's true. Because we associate depth with power and with authority. That's register. And we have timbre. It's the way your voice feels. Again, the research shows that we prefer voices which are rich, smooth, warm, like hot chocolate. Well, if that's not you, that's not the end of the world. Because you can train. Go get a voice coach. And there are amazing things you can do with breathing, with posture, and with exercises to improve the timbre of your voice. Then prosody. I love prosody. This is the sing-song, the meta-language that we use in order to impart meaning. It's root one for meaning in conversation. People who speak all on one note are really quite hard to listen to if they don't have any prosody at all. That's where the word monotonic comes from, or monotonous, monotone. Also, we have repetitive prosody now coming in, where every sentence ends as if it were a question, when it's actually not a question, it's a statement. And if you repeat that one over and over, it's actually restricting your ability to communicate through prosody, which I think is a shame. So let's try and break that habit. Pace. I can get very, very excited by saying something really, really quickly, or I can slow right down to emphasize. And at the end of that, of course, is our old friend, silence. There's nothing wrong with a bit of silence in a talk, is there? We don't have to fill it with ums and ahs. Can be very powerful. Of course, pitch often goes along with pace to indicate arousal, but you can do it just with pitch. Where did you leave my keys? Where did you leave my keys? It's a slightly different meaning in those two deliveries. And finally, volume. I can get really excited by using volume, sorry about that, if I startled anybody, or I can have you really pay attention by getting. Some people broadcast the whole time. Try not to do that. That's called sodcasting. Imposing your sound on people around you carelessly and inconsiderately. Not nice. Of course, where this all comes into play most of all is when you've got something really important to do. It might be standing on a stage like this and giving a talk to people. It might be proposing marriage, asking for a raise, a wedding speech, whatever it is. If it's really important, you owe it to yourself to look at this toolbox and the engine that it's going to work on. And no engine works well without being warmed up. Warm up your voice. Actually, let me show you how to do that. Would you all like to stand up for a moment? I'm going to show you the 6 vocal warm-up exercises that I do before every talk I ever do. Anytime you're going to talk to anybody important, do these. First, arms up. Deep breath in and sigh out, like that. One more time. Very good. Now we're going to warm up our lips and we're going to go bop, 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 bop. Very good. And now, just like when you were a kid. Now your lips should be coming alive. We're going to do the tongue next with exaggerated la, 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 la. Beautiful. You're getting really good at this. And then roll an R. That's like champagne for the tongue. Finally, and if I can only do one, the pros call this the siren. It's really good. It starts with wee and goes to or. The wee is high, the or is low. So you go, wee, or wee. Fantastic. Give yourselves a round of applause. Take a seat. Thank you. Next time you speak, do those in advance. Now, let me just put this in context to close. This is a serious point here. This is where we are now, right? We speak not very well into people who simply aren't listening in an environment that's all about noise and bad acoustics. I have talked about that on this stage in different phases. What would the world be like if we were speaking powerfully to people who are listening consciously in environments which were actually fit for purpose? Or to make that a bit larger, what would the world be like if we were creating sound consciously and consuming sound consciously and designing all our environments consciously for sound? That would be a world that does sound beautiful and one where understanding would be the norm. And that is an idea worth spreading. Thank you.
That was Julian Treasure, recorded at TED in June of 2013. This is Panangara, and you're listening to Barkata Circle on Party 93.4.
Dream a while, my Bonnie Marie, you won't ever cry for me. You say your lover had to fly, he gave you no reason why. But I would never do that to you. This thing about being true, lay you down, your sleepy head. You told me you wish you were dead. That's okay, dear, that's alright. I will stay with you through the night. Yes, I will do that for you. Cause I have this thing about being true.
And that was Barley Station with their song True. This is Panangara, and you're listening to Barkata Circle on Party 93.4. You can listen to a podcast of this program and broadcasts of other artists on this station by going to party934.com, and then you can click on the podcast page. The most important advice I give to the staff and volunteers of nonprofits is to make their elevator pitch personal and meaningful. Working in this nonprofit gives my life meaning and purpose because, and by answering this question, they are able to come from a genuine place, an authentic place. We all want to use our talents to create something meaningful with our lives. But how do you get started? And what if you're shy? Carrie Anderson writes on behavioral research-based ways to become more deeply connected. She's an Emmy-winning former NBC and Wall Street Journal reporter, now columnist for Forbes and Huffington Post. In her TED Talk, she shares her own story of chronic shyness and how she opened up her world by helping other people use their own talents and passions. Let's listen to Carrie Anderson.
TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and partner events. This episode features writer Carrie Anderson. This talk contains powerful visuals. Download the video at TED.com. Here's Carrie Anderson.
I grew up diagnosed as phobically shy. And like at least 20 other people in a room of this size, I was a stutterer. Do you dare raise your hand? And it sticks with us. It really does stick with us. Because when we are treated that way, we feel invisible sometimes. We're talked around and at. And as I started to look at people, which is mostly all I did, I noticed that some people really wanted attention and recognition. Remember, I was young then. So what did they do? What we still do, perhaps too often, we talk about ourselves. And yet there are other people I observed who had what I call a mutuality mindset. In each situation, they found a way to talk about us and create that us idea. So my idea to reimagine the world is to see it one where we all become greater opportunity makers with and for others. There's no greater opportunity or call for action for us now than to become opportunity makers who use best talents together more often for the greater good and accomplish things we couldn't have done on our own. And I want to talk to you about that, because even more than giving, is the capacity for us to do something smarter together for the greater good. That lifts us both up, and that can scale. That's why I'm sitting here. But I also want to point something else out. Each one of you is better than anybody else at something. That disproves that popular notion that if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So let me tell you about a Hollywood party I went to a couple years back, and I met this up-and-coming actress, and we were soon talking about something that we both felt passionately about, public art. And she had the fervent belief that every new building in Los Angeles should have public art in it. She wanted a regulation for it. And she fervently started, who's here from Chicago? She fervently started talking about these bean-shaped reflective sculptures in the Millennium Park. And people would walk up to it, and they'd smile in the reflection of it, and they'd pose, and they'd vamp, and they'd take selfies together, and they'd laugh. And as she was talking, a thought came to my mind. I said, I know someone you ought to meet. He's getting out of San Quentin in a couple of weeks. And he shares your fervent desire that art should engage and enable people to connect. He spent 5 years in solitary. And I met him because I gave a speech at San Quentin, and he's articulate. And he's rather easy on the eyes. Because he's buff, he had a workout regime he did every day. I think she was following me at that point. I said he'd be an unexpected ally. And not just that, there's James. He's an architect, and he's a professor. And he loves placemaking. And placemaking is when you have those mini plazas and those urban walkways, and where they're dotted with art, where people draw and come up and talk sometimes. I think they'd make good allies. And indeed, they were. They met together. They prepared. They spoke in front of the Los Angeles City Council. And the council members not only passed the regulation, half of them came down and asked to pose with them afterwards. They were startling, compelling, and credible. You can't buy that. What I'm asking you to consider is what kind of opportunity makers we might become. Because more than wealth or fancy titles or a lot of contacts, it's our capacity to connect around each other's better side and bring it out. And I'm not saying this is easy. And I'm sure many of you have made the wrong moves too about who you wanted to connect with. But what I want to suggest is, this is an opportunity. I started thinking about it way back when I was a Wall Street Journal reporter and I was in Europe and I was supposed to cover trends and trends that transcended business or politics or lifestyle. So I had to have contacts in different worlds, very different than mine, because otherwise you couldn't spot the trends. And third, I had to write the story in a way, stepping into the reader's shoes, they could see how these trends could affect their lives. That's what opportunity makers do. And here's the strange thing. Unlike an increasing number of Americans who are working and living and playing with people who think exactly like them, because we then become more rigid and extreme, opportunity makers are actively seeking situations with people unlike them, and they're building relationships. And because they do that, they have trusted relationships where they can bring the right team in and recruit them to solve a problem better and faster and seize more opportunities. They're not affronted by differences. They're fascinated by them. And that is a huge shift in mindset. And once you feel it, you want it to happen a lot more. This world is calling out for us to have a collective mindset. And I believe in doing that, it's especially important now. Why is it important now? Because things can be devised like drones and drugs and data collection, and they can be devised by more people and cheaper ways for beneficial purposes. And then, as we know from the news every day, they can be used for dangerous ones. It calls on us, each of us, to a higher calling. But here's the icing on the cake. It's not just the first opportunity that you do with somebody else that's probably your greatest as an institution or an individual. It's after you've had that experience and you trust each other. It's the unexpected things that you devise later on you never could have predicted. For example, Marty is the husband of that actress I mentioned. And he watched them when they were practicing, and he was soon talking to Wally, my friend, the ex-con, about that exercise regime. And he thought, I have a set of racquetball courts. That guy could teach it. A lot of the people who work at or are members of my courts, they're frequent travelers. They could practice this in their hotel room, no equipment provided. That's how Wally got hired. Not only that, years later, he was also teaching racquetball. Years after that, he was teaching the racquetball teachers. What I'm suggesting is when you connect with people around a shared interest and action, you're accustomed to serendipitous things happening into the future. And I think that's what we're looking at. We open ourselves up to those opportunities. And in this room are key players in technology. Key players are uniquely positioned to do this, to scale systems and projects together. So here's what I'm calling for you to do. Remember the three traits of opportunity makers. Opportunity makers keep honing their top strength, and they become pattern seekers. They get involved in different worlds than their worlds, so they're trusted and they can see those patterns, and they communicate to connect around sweet spots of shared interest. So what I'm asking you is, the world is hungry. I truly believe, my firsthand experience, the world is hungry for us to unite together as opportunity makers and to emulate those behaviors as so many of you already do. I know that firsthand. And to reimagine a world where we use our best talents together more often to accomplish greater things together than we could on our own. Just remember, as Dave Liniger once said, you can't succeed coming to the potluck with only a fork. Thank you very much. Thank you.
That was Carrie Anderson, recorded at TED in September of 2014. This is Panangara, and you're listening to Barkata Circle on Party 93.4.
So many people calling me, so many things to do. I could let it all bother me, but instead I choose to follow through. 'Cause things once were hard for me and seemed too tough to bear. But looking back now I see, when I needed people they were there. And now I realize that I must strong, and I know it's right for me to share. When you choose to have a giving heart, you'll know it's the right place to start, and good things will come back to you. 'Cause when I gave, somebody gave back to me. I used to help unwillingly till it all made sense to me.
Cause when
that was Rivka with her song, When You Truly Care. This is Panangara, and you're listening to Barkata Circle on Party 93.4. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Stay tuned for Uber Jazz at 3 p.m. Eastern and more non-traditional independent programming. Party 93.4 is a project of the Freeform Radio Initiative, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide diverse and innovative online broadcasting that reflects the interests and concerns of the community. If you like the program that you've been listening to, please consider supporting the Freeform Radio Initiative by making a tax-deductible donation. You can go to the website at freeformradio.org or party934.com and click on the donate button. Thanks in advance for your support. I would also like to invite you to sign up for the e-newsletter. It's a simple way to show your support and a great way to keep tabs on the Freeform Radio Initiative. You can sign up by going to party934.com and you can fill in the entry field with your email address. It's that simple. This is Panangara, your mixologist for Barkata Circle and storytelling for nonprofits. Thank you once again for listening. Till next time, discover how telling your story will spark another story from someone across the table or perhaps across the globe, so you can make meaningful connections, foster understanding, and bring about real change in people's lives. Have a great week.